Hey there, listeners. Quick rundown on this week's episode before the theme music. This week's episode is going to be separated into a couple different segments, starting with Chris and myself discussing Tuesday's B&R announcement, then Ricky and myself doing the same thing, followed by two interviews we were fortunate enough to record this weekend at DreamHack with Cedric Phillips and CGB Covert Go Blue. We were also fortunate enough to use DreamHack streaming space, where we were joined by DaKrabs MTG for a nice chat, and then Casual Jake joined us for some Paper Pioneer we got to stream. Both of those streams will be available on our Twitch VODs and YouTube this weekend. We also had the pleasure to sit down with Amanda Stevens at AmandaTNStevens on Twitter, who is an ambassador for Trans Lifeline, but unfortunately there were some audio issues, so we won't be able to include that. However, I do want to say that Trans Lifeline is a peer support and crisis hotline for those in the trans community that will connect you with another trans person to talk with. If you feel like you need to talk to somebody and find help, their hotline number is 877-565-8860 for the U.S., or 877-330-6366 for Canada. You can find or donate to their website at translifeline.org, or find them on Twitter at translifeline. I'm also excited to say that the next Crew 3 Championship will be taking place Saturday, June 25th, featuring the Explorer format, will be streamed and used to help raise money for this amazing organization. And if you're lucky, maybe we'll have some wrestling to end the stream. Now, let's roll the theme song and get on with the show. Back to episode of Crew 3 Podcast. I'm just recommending with me for now. It's Chris.
For now, I'm here. I may leave later.
Because you might leave later. So we weren't gonna record an episode this week, but I don't know if you saw some big news dropped like this morning. And so we need to hurriedly discuss that before I kick over to the interviews that I need to start editing that we recorded at DreamHack. So I got Chris here for now. Ricky, we couldn't get all the boys lined up. So, my cat is going utterly wild. I'm sorry, everyone.
Losing it.
She's upset just like we all are about those bands. So Ricky will be here like in studio with me tomorrow. So I'll record a few minutes with him about this. And then I figured let's talk to Chris tonight. So this first half will be me and Chris. Then it will be me and Ricky, and then we'll cut over to the interviews we recorded at DreamHack. Real quick, before we talk about that news, you want to say a quick something about your DreamHack weekend, Chris?
Yeah, it was awesome, and I really, as much of a bummer as it was that the main event wasn't Pioneer, it worked out for us just because of the sheer amount of stuff we got to do, you know?
Yeah, like, I think so.
We played a ton of Pioneer in like a more casual fashion. I think we all played a ton of different decks and had a bunch of different fun. And I mostly lost on the weekend. Like, I was just trying out a bunch of different decks and having a bunch of fun. And we gave away some packs for some challenges for beating us. But it worked out really well, you know, kind of silver lining in that we just got to experience the convention. We got to watch some fighting game action. We got to talk to, you know, a bunch of different content creators just in matches. Just if we were playing against people, it'd be like, oh, what do you do? Oh, you've got a Twitch stream. And there was a ton of different content creators there and talk a ton of Pioneer. So it was an awesome time. I got to ride a mechanical bull. So there you go.
Yeah, we'll have to put that video up there somewhere. I'll let you handle it. You have the copy of the video I sent you.
You got it.
You can post that wherever. I agree. I thought it was a great weekend. I mean, it was really dope getting to do like the studio setup. We got to stream from the tabletop stage. It was super cool. We got to just rep the format, rep Pioneer. I think one of the coolest things that I don't think was super advertised a whole lot, and hopefully they keep doing this, was I liked the fact that if you had a full weekend pass, you got the vouchers for the Magic events.
I think it had to be that way, but absolutely, you know?
No, well, that's the thing, right, is I think, you know, Magic players aren't used to paying a venue fee for their events, right? Whereas the FGC, right, like, you know, hey, I paid my $100 for my weekend festival pass. Now I'm just going to go pay $1 to sign up for whatever pools I want to play in, right?
Right.
Whereas Magic players are used to paying nothing to get in the door, and then, you know, you're paying a lot of overhead in tournament fees instead. So I think, you know, having about half of the cost of that festival weekend ticket get reimbursed to you in the form of vouchers is a great way to handle that.
Yeah, I agree. I agree entirely. I do think that the system should have been more clear. I think they did need to advertise it a little more upfront. At the same time, I do think there may have been a little bit of strategy there where, like, they didn't want to advertise people that didn't come there for Magic cards and then just all of a sudden make certain events inaccessible by having, like, 1,000. Because, I mean, there were thousands of people there, right? Tons yes. of people there. So, like, if you weren't making, you know, if you were just advertising to the general public, hey, you get free Magic events, I mean, the rounds would have never ended. I mean, you'd have people learning Magic as they, you know, try to get their value out of their sealed pools. And, like, they wouldn't want to be there. They would just be playing because it was free and not actually have an interest in Magic. So, like, I think there were some side effects to not just telling everybody. But they maybe need to be a little bit more clear that, like, hey, if I sign up and say, hey, I'm here for Magic cards, it needs to be a little more obvious that you've got vouchers. Because, I mean, even some of our own friends didn't know that vouchers came with their passes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. For sure. I, you know, when we initially got the invite, I thought we were just getting those just because we were, like, invited Magic content creators, not that just everyone with a weekend pass got that.
I couldn't believe that we got them. Like, I thought as, like, I knew that people who paid for their pass did get them. And I thought that, like, we didn't, because I was like, oh, well, we didn't, you know, we got an invite, so, like, we have to pay for our events or whatever. So learning that we also got them was pretty sweet, to be honest with you, on top of everything else. So,
yeah. Yeah. And of course, besides all the awesome people who you're going to hear those interviews, unfortunately, there are some people that I wanted to talk to. We just have time that hopefully I'll be able to get into some Discord interviews with here later on. Just sort of, you know, it was kind of, you know, it was great because everyone, you know, it was everyone's first real kind of big Magic event back for a lot of people. So it was, you know, nice to sort of say hi, introduce ourselves to people, but then we didn't have the time to really sit down for interviews with the people I really wanted to hit, which is fine because we still have some great interviews, like I said, I still need to get through and start editing all of those. And then, of course, I also just want to quick shout out Torben, Bear, and the rest of the DreamHack staff for putting on an awesome killer show.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, the staff was great, super helpful, everyone was nice. And, like, it was also just kind of cool just to have, like, the staff just, like, really feel like they're also just taking interest in what we were doing, too.
100%. Like, I think one of the coolest things was definitely that, like, when we needed help, help was there. Like, when we needed to change setups, we were kind of allowed to. When we needed help changing the setup, like, the help was very quick, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, early in the day, we weren't 100% sure what to do as far as, like, getting help. But once we kind of got pointed to the right people, the people who were kind of the, hey, whatever you need, I'm your solutions person, were amazing. And I really can't thank DreamHack enough for being really on top of it. I mean, there was so much going on. And when you consider how much there was going on with different people doing different things, it is really amazing how seamlessly that it went from kind of start to finish, you know?
For sure. All right. Well, let's get to the crux of it all, Chris. Let's talk about those bans, shall we? And of course, for those interviews that you're going to hear here in a little bit, reminder that those were all recorded this weekend. And because I know with Cedric, for sure, we talk about bans and the possibility of bans. And he was share our opinion of, let's leave the format alone for now, which Wizards cited was not the case.
Right.
Before we dive into the bans, though, and sort of our thoughts, there is an immediate thing I thought about, which was, hey, remember when Modern, like, had a whole week of, like, lead time? Like, hey, just so you know, on X date, there will be a ban list updating the Modern format.
Yeah. Yeah, I do remember that, as a matter of fact.
Where was that?
It was the fourth card from our Expressive iteration that we didn't get to see. We saw the three cards, but we didn't see the fourth one, and that's where the Uno reverse card was that was going to bring these bans up for us, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's just a matter of sometimes, you know, it just kind of depends on what happens, right? Like, obviously, if it's bans I agree with, I'm always like, oh, cool, I know what's coming, right?
Right.
But also, I don't know, I just feel like just the, even if they would have told us, like, the end of last week these were coming, right? Right. We would have known, we would have been able to prepare, and now you have people who are going to events this weekend just like, well, I got, like, 3 days to figure my ish out.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people on Twitter, especially the past couple weeks, especially content creators, have been asking for bans for whatever they lost to most recently. And it's been a little wild. I mean, it's literally been, let's just ban every card in, like, the top 20% of play. And, you know, we are in favor of making changes to the format, but it's definitely been pretty extreme. You know, there's been a ton of hyperbolic comparisons. People are getting in on it just for the, like, oh, yeah, definitely. Just for, like, the say-so, I feel like. I don't know that clout's the right word, but it's definitely been kind of a pile-on of, like, let's just ban all these random cards. And don't get me wrong, like, could some of these cards have just been, like, ridiculously over-represented at, like, a Pro Tour or something? You know, I definitely could see that happening. But, you know, the lack of warning, I definitely think, was a little surprising, given the results and the diversity of the format. You know, so circling it back around to the notice that we got, which was zero, you know, I don't know. That definitely interesting. I mean, I kind of do miss the scheduled banned and restricted announcements, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe this was on one and I missed it. I'm not really sure. But yeah, I definitely miss the little warnings that we were getting for things changing.
Yeah. All right. So real quick here, of course, obviously, Winota Expressive Iteration banned. Here is their sort of explanation of it. As noted in previous updates, we want Pioneer to provide as diverse an experience as possible. Built out of an ever-growing collection of standards past, over time it has become clear that Nia Winota is suppressing diversity as its power and consistency have drastically reduced incentives to play other linear creature-based strategies. Not only is it a resilient mid-range deck that can leverage many powerful mana creatures available in the format, but its explosive draws involving the deck's namesake can create unassailable battlefield states as quickly as turn 3. Due to its large meta share, high win rate, and ability to create frustrating removal check gameplay, Winota Joiner forces his banned in Pioneer. Expressive Iteration has been a multi-format all-star since its release in Strixhaven School of Mages. It has fueled a variety of highly successful Izzet strategies in Pioneer by both providing card selection and card advantage at a much higher rate than was available to other decks, making it extremely difficult for other strategies to engage them in wars of attrition. Although we recognize that several other powerful card draw spells in the format, notably Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time, we currently believe that Dell spells contribute to blue decks in Pioneer having a unique identity among Eternal formats. As Pioneer's card pool has fewer strong cantrips and no fetch lands, we're hoping many Delve cards can continue to be part of the format at a more moderate power level compared to how they would be in other non-rotating formats. To lower the win rate of the wide variety of Izzet decks and bring them further in line with other strategies in the format while maintaining what makes them special in Pioneer, Special Iteration is banned. It's worth noting that we will continue to align Pioneer ban announcements with Action and Explorer. This means Expressive Iteration will also be banned in Explorer. Winota Joiner Forces has previously been banned in Explorer. When we made the change, we noted that we would revisit that ban in with Wizards of Dominaria United. However, now that Winota Joiner Forces is banned in Pioneer, we plan to leave it banned in Explorer going forward. So let's start with Winota. They say that Winota is suppressing diversity and consistency and has too much consistency and makes an unfair, frustrating removal check in gameplay. My response is it stifling diversity? Maybe in mid-range, right? But we're looking at Pioneer top 8, like challenge top 8s, and how many weeks in a row have we had like 6-7 archetypes in top 8s?
A lot of them.
I don't want to downplay the fact that, like, yes, it is very frustrating to open up a league and go and play against four Winota decks. Like, I understand that was the case, but I mean, people are just going to kind of just hop on what they think is the easiest way to grind out treasure chest, right?
Yep.
I don't know. I feel like I'm going to speak for all of us right now. And I just feel like, yo, like the format was finally starting to adjust to Winota, and a peek behind the curtains on playing Pioneer, Winota was also being downgraded out of S tier this week. It was going to be A tier. It put up 3 results out of our measured metrics, and it was going to be downgraded this week. Just because Hyper Aggro is starting to compete against it, Rakdos midrange and other removal heavy decks are starting to come up with it. The deck was no longer unassailable, I feel like. And people started to realize, like, oh, well, you know, I have to adjust my strategy. I can't just moan and complain on Twitter until something happens.
Yeah, I don't think that I'm in a weird place because I don't think this ban was needed, but I'm not really against it either. You know, I used my super secret formula and I have calculated that we needed about 37 cards to be banned for my Siege Rhinos to be good.
Okay.
So this is 2 more bans. That means I only need 35 more cards to be banned for my Siege Rhinos to be good again. And ultimately, that's what I'm after. So And to explain that a little bit further, like, I just don't think there was a lot of interesting gameplay in, like, a, hey, I'm going to slam a Winota on turn three. Like, how many people were, like, strategically going, like, oh, I should not play my Winota here? Like, nobody. Like, you're slamming it and seeing if they have the Fatal Push they can kill it with, or the, you know, two-mana removal spell. And again, surprisingly, Winota's a little bit hard to kill. I don't think it's that hard to kill. I think people should just, you know, play decks that can kill a four toughness creature. You know, like, it's a 4-mana 4/4. Like, it doesn't come out on turn
one. You have to kill the four toughness creature.
You could kill a thing they can attack with, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you kill the little citizen boy there, or whatever it is, the prosperous innkeeper that they were using to get their treasure, or their elf, or whatever it might be, and then you can untap and more effectively kill it with, like, sorcery spells. So, but, you know, again, like, I don't think it was a very interesting deck, right? It's kind of like, play Winota, spin the wheel. And
well, it's like an okay mid-range deck that was really being held up by, like, once again, here's all these red-green mid-range decks that are just, like, kind of okay decks that are just being held up by the power of Fable of the Mirror Breaker and Asika's Chariot.
Yeah.
And it just happened that this deck's, like, gimmick card was just really good.
Yeah, I don't think that the mid-range plan of Winota really competes with, like, mono green or red black or mini decks, really. I think it was more like, hey, your opponent stumbled, you still had a chance if you didn't have your Winota. Fable also lets you draw cards in red, right? Because you get to discard two, draw two. So there was, like, more ways to try and find your Winota. So, I mean, you know, again, I'm not sad about this ban, because it's not like I think the deck was, like, super incredibly healthy for the format. I'm just not sure it was that bad either, given that I kind of plan to be able to kill it, you know? But I don't know that the interactiveness level of the deck makes me sad to see it go.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Changing direction here. Expressive Iteration, on the other hand, you know, I'm personally sad to see this one go, right? Like, I just finished Prowess, and luckily I was able to play it in one of our side events and get a few other games in with it before it got the ban hammer. But if we're going to ban cards, I think Expressive is the better choice to ban versus Cruise and Dig. And I honestly think their reasoning for the explanation is really spot on. And it's what I've said, is that, like, being able to play the Delve spells gives Pioneer some amount of draw other formats don't get, right?
Yep.
And, you know, it can really feel backbreaking when your opponent's, like, out of zero, is at, like, no cards in hand, and they top deck their Treasure Cruise, right? And they get to delve away seven, play it for a single mana, and just play, like, all three spells they draw off of it, right? But how often does that really happen, in my opinion? Whereas Expressive Iteration, you know, you can play it on turn three, make your land drop, play another one mana spell, or, you know, later on in the game, just shove the land to the bottom, play the two best cards on the top of your deck. Like, Iteration was the real secret sauce, was the real powerhouse behind all these Izzet strategies.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Expressive Iteration combines my best and worst takes in Pioneer. Like, earlier on, my takes were a lot better than they have probably been the last, like, year, I guess, yeah, maybe year or so, where, like, I did not think Expressive Iteration was that good of a card. I was definitely wrong. I was very, very wrong on that. But early on in the Pioneer format, we were saying, hey, the Delve spells, they're pretty niche, you know? They require setup. They require you to be wanting to play a deck that churns a lot of spells out in particular. And Dig Through Time is double blue, which not every deck wants to cast. And the big deal is that, like, you know, Niv to Light was playing Expressive Iteration, right? A lot of these decks that were four and five colors were playing Expressive Iteration, whereas they're not going to be playing the Delve spells because they're not really churned through decks that, like, focus on blue as a color. They're more just, again, four and five color piles that Expressive Iteration was insane card advantage for. So I still remain the Delve spells, at least right now, are totally fine. Expressive Iteration was probably seeing a little bit too much play. And I don't know that it's better than the Delve spells, but it was definitely easier to play because it didn't require the setup that the Delve spells did, again, as far as, you know, churning through spells to your graveyard. So, again, not sad about this one either. Not super excited for it. Again, it was a, you know, card advantage card that I was going to love to play because I love me some Izzet spells, but definitely understand that it was getting a little bit ridiculous. And as soon as I saw some of like the non-Izzet decks playing it, and I was like, oh yeah, you're just playing this in your 4 and 5 color greed piles. I was like, aha, yeah, this is where this card's a problem.
Yep. So where do you think the format kind of goes from here? You know, everyone, of course, is extolling the death of Izzet prowess. You know, how can control, how can Phoenix survive, right? I mean, Phoenix was good before Expressive Iteration. Like, they'll just go back to playing Strategic Planning and Charter Course. Prowess is going to try out, like, I'm assuming Reckless Impulse, Light at the Stage, stuff like that, mm-hmm, right? Like,
right.
What do you see a home for these decks, right? Like, I don't know if Prowess is going to be OP busted anymore, like Tier S, but it's going to be an A or B's deck still, I feel like.
Yeah, because I think Ledger Shredder was more important in that deck, to be honest with you. I really do. Mm. Like, I think Ledger Shredder is such a powerful card. And like you said, I think that, you know, you have quite a few evasive creatures in the Izzet Prowess deck. And I don't think playing Light Up the Stage is outside of the realm of the possibility. And that lets you, again, play the spells for more turns. I mean, Light Up the Stage is a busted card. It's very, very strong. I really do still believe that. And, you know, it's definitely tough in to get that damage. But when you have, you know, two core threats that are flyers, like you have in Izzet Prowess, I think it could be a replacement. I'm not saying that 100% it will be, but I think it's fine. And so I think that, like you said, maybe it knocks the deck down a little bit just because the card advantage, obviously, Expressive Iteration grants you is pretty crazy as you get to that mid and late game. But obviously, I think the Izzet control deck is much harder hit by this. Niv to Light is much harder hit by this. I think your speedier decks are just going to be like, eh. You know, I wasn't even sure that Expressive Iteration was the right card for Phoenix in the first place anyway. Again, I was wrong, but I still maintain my point that it wasn't going to be the most insane. And I think Phoenix does not care as much about this as some of the other decks do, like you were kind of saying.
For sure. And then, you know, does this open up the great mid-range unbanning, or are people just going to realize, again, you know, we're still 35 cards away from Seadrino being good?
Yeah. Yeah, I will just tell you that, again, like, mono green, if you aren't killing it early, is just one of the, especially now that it's kind of got that combo, it ramps very consistently, and it has surprisingly good card advantage, and even though it's just playing the one color with Nykthos. So I don't know that your mid-range piles, unless, again, you know, I'm sure there's something I'm thinking about, your mid-range piles don't seem to stack up super well against mono green. And mono green is starting to rise quite a bit in popularity. I was talking to several people who have it built, who think it's a position to, again, very well against, like, the red-black, which has been very popular, and things like that. So, and I'm just also not sure what mid-range piles stack up better than a red-black, you know? Like, something might. Maybe there's, again, some combo decks now that are going to come out that have a little bit more time against, you know, like, Winota was killing you on turn 3 or turn 4, or at least was mounting too much of a board presence, and maybe now there's some combo decks that can sneak back up that could potentially take out some of the mid-range decks. I expect to see some of that coming back. But I'm just not sure, like, are you going to beat, if you want to play a mid-range pile, mono green or red black at a competitive level? I think casually, this wasn't an issue anyway. Like, people are having fun playing all kinds of decks. We're getting 15 to 20 people every week and having tons of fun. But from a competitive standpoint, those would be my concerns about, you know, did we do something here?
I mean, speaking of did we do something here, you know, people were talking about, you couldn't just ban Expressive Iteration, you couldn't just ban Winota, both of these had to go, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there an argument that, you know, just like when we had the big combo banning, like Nykthos or something else should be going out with these cards?
Yeah, I mean, like, first of all, I think that, again, these bans are fine as far as just, like, hey, let's keep the format in check and keep try and keep some diversity here, because, again, it is the most diverse format, at least at a competitive level. Right? Like, mm-hmm. Modern has such a massive card pool, you could argue it's more diverse because it has so many more cards. And I understand that argument, but I do think that it's surprising how diverse Pioneer is given the smaller card pool. You know? So, that being said, like, maybe, right? Like, I think Nykthos, again, I mean, my first concern was how strong is Mono Green going to be? How strong is Devotion going to be in general? So I definitely think that it's going to be on the watch list, right? If they're banning these cards, and yeah, I'm just really not sure that any mid-range deck can stack up against, mono green? I mean, like, does Omnath really? Like, that's a genuine question. I don't know. Like, are we going to see some Omnath piles? Like,
I think we're going to see Omnath piles, right? But I tell you what, they're going to have a tough time with mono green.
That was my thought. Like, the deck just goes so over the top, and it so consistently with Storm the Festival finds the card it needs, right? Like, finds the card it needs. I mean, Storm the Festival was a huge printing. It really was. And gets kind of, most of the cards that you want. Gets your Cavalier. Does it get Karn or is it only creatures? No, it gets permanents.
It gets permanents.
Yeah, it gets permanents. I mean, I just don't see these decks stacking up to mono green. And I hope I'm wrong, but I think you made a great call out, which is like maybe Nykthos is next. Maybe it should have already been banned if they were going to take these steps. But definitely something on our watch list, I'd say.
Yeah, I think so. All right, Chris. Well, I will let you go. Thank you for joining me for this part. Everyone, keep it tuned in to the rest of this episode. I'll have Ricky on here. And like I said, I will have all of those DreamHack interviews tacked on the end. So buckle up. It's going to be a big episode. But if you want to keep jumping around, chapter markers are going to be in the podcast description. So keep a lookout for those.
Real quick.
So, Chris. Yep,
yeah, I just wanted to thank the you know, obviously you guys are meeting at your place in the next couple of days, right? You and Ricky.
Yes.
Me and you were able to get together here at the Olive Garden, Crew 3 headquarters, the Olive Garden that is, you know, inside. So we're inside the Olive Garden, which is inside an Amazon warehouse inside of Seattle, Washington. So shout out to the Olive Garden here for hosting our headquarters as me and Ruckman get together for this.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you later, man.
All right, buddy. Bye.
All right, we are back with Ricky now here to discuss. Well, actually, Ricky, first of all, I do need to apologize. I barged in here into my own apartment. Actually, I had to kick your pool boys out.
You came down to Margaritaville. You pulled my boat in. You know, took all my buoys, the cocktail umbrellas out of my drinks, and was like, "No week off." That Rosewater's up to something again.
Rosewater's up to something. So I already got a chance to talk a little bit about this with Chris. So let's start off with just your initial first reactions, and we'll kind of go through some of the stuff I talked with Chris about.
So, like, we had a banning, and we didn't know about it.
Modern, once again, had, like, a week notice. They got a week on watch.
They didn't make any changes to Modern, right? They didn't announce anything about this BNR announcement, right?
Yeah.
It was just like, boom, today's the day. Did any big Pioneer thing happen over the weekend? More than normal?
A couple side events at DreamHack, like...
Yeah, those didn't have deck lists, so...
The Commander Fest?
Oh, the Commander Fest! My favorite place to go and play Pioneer. They decided enough's enough. They're tired of Redditors and other salty Magic players from Arena losing to Enota because, I don't want to play removal in my deck. I want to play, you know, fight rigging and non-removal and non-interactive decks. And I don't like dying to Enota because I didn't interact the entire game. So they banned Enota. And I think just on that banning, bad ban. Personal opinion, I think it's a dumb ban. I don't think it needed to go. I don't think it was, like... I mean, when was the last time you saw, like, multiple Enota decks in a top 8 of a challenge? We look through challenges every week.
I feel like, you know, every now and then we'll see, like, two copies in the top 8.
Maybe.
Definitely there's, like, you know, like one in the top 8, two more in, like, the top 16.
And I get that, like, what you really should be looking for, like, if a deck is oppressive or not, is you need to look at 32s. Top 32s and assess from there, right? Because, like, who is making it deep in the tournament, right? Because, right... The argument, of course, of like, well, it didn't win, isn't really a good argument. We need to see a percentage.
Hold on, I'm gonna clip that for the future for when we have the ban something for Phoenix.
Anyway, we were full. We'll get to that. We'll clip it in right now. But the thing is, like, if you look at the top 32 of tournament results, even then, like, I wasn't seeing just like an oppressive amount of Enota. I mean, if anything, I was seeing an oppressive amount of blue-red control and blue-white control, right?
Yeah.
Whatever. Some people think that Enota was restricting creature decks. The best argument I've heard about this ban is that, well, it means they have to watch, like, the power level of humans that they print for the rest of time. They can't print good 6-mana and 7-mana humans anymore. And to that, I kind of get it.
Like, but how many good 6-mana, 7-mana humans were we ever going to get, really?
When are we ever going to get another set that actually goes into Standard and Pioneer? like an eternity, right?
Yeah.
Like at least
September?
September?
Yeah.
So like I don't think we're worried about the reprints that we're like finally just like looking at, oh man, there's this sweet human card in
Double Masters.
Not Double Masters, what's the next set? Dominaria United.
Yeah.
The Jumpstart packs?
Which we still have yet to get confirmation on whether they're going to be standard legal or not.
The big joke is that they're only 18 packs in a box. Box Jumpstart.
And it's the same price.
But that's not a number that divides by 4 evenly.
Oh,
and
you're
4
right.
is how many you need to play a game of Jumpstart. So awkward. Anyways, that's aside the point. The big point here is like, I mean, what do you think? You played against Winota?
I mean, you know,
it needs a board presence and then you have to resolve like, a 4
like,
mana spell.
Like, it is. So when I think of like what Winota is, right, it's another mediocre Gruul deck with some white cards. The only difference that is held up by the power of Chariot and Fable the Mirror Breaker.
Right.
The only difference is this dumb Gruul deck is the one with the best combo piece.
Sure.
You still need a board, like you're saying, you still need a board presence, right? Sure, Winota's a 4-mana 4-4. That's hard to kill with Burn, that's hard to kill with a non-revolted Fatal Push. But there are plenty of other removal spells in the format. There are things you can jump through. Or, guess what? All their other guys are like 2 toughness or lower.
Right, just kill the board.
Winota doesn't do anything if she comes down with no board.
And yes, I get it. It's like, well, she has a Chariot. She can still swing. It's like, you get one trigger. That's probably not going to kill you. That gives you time on your turn to kill the Winota, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, like, if the Winota comes in, cruise Chariot, swings for 4, and then like, they find, like, another Winota, or, like, maybe, like, worst-case scenario, they do find, like, the 6 drop, but they normally won't.
Yeah. That's the other thing, too, right? Is it's just, like, okay, yeah. Like, I've been playing Rakdos Midrange, I've been playing other decks, right? Even with removal, you could say, like, oh, well, what do you do when they draw the second Winota? Well, the same thing I do whenever I Thoughtseize my opponent, and they draw the same spell I just Thoughtseized.
Right.
Just suck it up and move on to the next game.
Right. I get it. I kind of get it.
It's a big...
At the same time, I think it's just mostly... Salt, because once again, Explorer had Winota for a while. Everyone complained about it because there's not really as much in the way of like removal options as there are in Real Pioneer, as there are in Explorer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like we still have Heartless Act and stuff like that, but we don't have like, you know, we don't have Rending Volley is a big one.
Yeah.
And we don't have like Supreme Verdict for the control decks, you know? It's just sort of like, I just think that honestly, Winota could have stayed. I think that now that we've banned it, fine, move on. But, like, I think, honestly, like, Grease Fang is more powerful.
I think so, too. Yeah, I think so, too. And I think people are already complaining about Grease Fang and the Explorer keys, right? It's going to be the same thing in Pioneer. And I think, honestly, like, the argument for...
The big thing is Grease Fang gets shut down by one... Oh,
Dolphins.
Dolphin sounds.
Dolphins.
You bring me back from vacation, my week off, you're going to get some dolphin sounds.
You're still drinking. I thought I told you to throw that out. So the big thing though I will agree with is like, yes, we are very like challenge oriented, but I won't discount the fact that like Winota is a large part of league queues, but also that just comes down to it being a very simple to pilot to a point linear deck, right?
Right.
That you can just churn through leagues with.
Right.
Same thing with the Explorer, like 7-0 queues and things right. like that. It's a deck you can throw together and just go for easy prizes.
Right. Can you replace my dolphin noises with the paper shred noise?
I can, yeah.
Oh, great. Excellent. More paper shredder noise.
Chris will hate it.
Yeah. Great. But I think, like, the real interesting ban, the real exciting ban here, right?
Yeah.
Is EI.
I think so, too.
Expressive Iteration. Everybody wants the Delve spells banned. But, like...
Who's playing Dig anymore?
EI? That hurt.
It did.
That was, like, one of those, like... You know, surely, you know, not EI.
Not EI.
That wasn't even on the radar.
Surely they're not smart enough to realize EI's the better card.
Like, have you seen, oh god, what's that movie called? It's the baseball movie where they're all, like, in the hood playing baseball and they're trying to go to the championship and the guy listens to Big Papa.
I have no
idea. The pitcher, like, listens to Biggie Smalls to, like, get in the groove or whatever.
I have no idea.
Oh, well.
I don't watch sports movies. If Chris is here...
Damn, what's it called? Anyways, there's like a small child character in that movie. I'm going to spoil this movie from...
That we don't even know the name
2003
of.
That we don't even know the name of. But like, the small little child character who doesn't even get to play baseball because he's not old enough to be on the team and he hangs out with the team anyways.
Hardball.
Hardball, that's correct. It, you know, he just gets like shot at the end and you're just like, G-Baby died? And that's how I feel like with EI. It was like I wasn't even expecting that. It came out of nowhere, right?
Yeah.
Plays like Game of Thrones out here, right? But I agree with it.
I do too.
I love EI more than anyone else. Not true. There's other people that love EI more than me. But
yeah, what am I going to do with these F&M promos now? Sell them to modern players?
Yeah, sell them to modern players, sell them to legacy players.
Do I just get rid of my Ledger Shredders now, Ricky?
I just like the fact that, like, it's... I mean, EI is a card that, like, we should have seen this coming. Like, it sees play in literally every format, right?
Yeah.
And I kind of like that sort of just like, hey, this card selection is too good for two mana in this format.
Yeah.
And it smooths a lot of draws. And I'm thinking, you know, in Phoenix... A lot of times, I don't want a Treasure Cruise off the
top. You want that Expressive Iteration.
I want Expressive Iteration off the top, and then I can find maybe, like, Treasure Cruise plus stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I think that card saves you off the top more than any other card in the format. I think that the card selection is disgusting. I think that the play patterns with it are very good.
Well, because you have to think about, right, like, Treasure Cruise, right? Yes, you can cast it for one mana.
Right.
But you have to have the graveyard for it.
Right.
Expressive Iteration is always two mana, right, and you see the same amount of cards.
Exactly. And then on top of that, right, like, I mean, we did need to just check Narset Control a little bit. They were getting a little too big for their britches. I don't know if you've noticed recently, but they've turned their two-card combo into a three-card combo now. They are not satisfied with playing Narset, playing Collective Defiance or Day's Undoing, right?
Okay.
Now, they want to quicken and cast that in your draw step. So you get no cards. And if it's a Day's Undoing, they get seven cards. So they've been playing three of quickens. And yeah, sometimes they quicken the Anger of the Gods. But, like, why are they playing three of quicken? Because they can assemble Narset, quicken, and a wheel effect so easily with cards like EI.
Yeah.
I think that it's a good hit, and I think that it's not only is it a good hit, there's not a lot of cards that fill the exact same shoes well, which is nice. There's not just going to be, like, a slot in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even though, like, there's not a slot in for Winota, because the deck's called Winota, right? I mean, we could have called some of these decks just red-blue EI decks, right?
Sure.
Like, I think they just allowed a lot of things to become really big, and honestly... EI was allowing Prowess to become the better mono-red deck than mono-red. And as a newly formed mono-red player for life.
I don't know about newly.
I couldn't let that happen. I've been playing mono-red since Kumano came out, and that card's broke. The deck is insane. Y'all should have bought your Chandras when they were $18 for the extended arts.
So here's the question now. Are the blue-red decks dead?
No, not at all.
Okay, so Phoenix lives on, right?
Phoenix is going to live on. They still have Treasure Cruise.
You can switch into Strategic Planning. Is it Charm? You got options.
I like Is it Charm a lot. I've actually subbed in like two Is it Charm, and then I just upped my removal count.
Yeah.
So, like, I think the deck will flow better now.
Yeah. Same thing with Prowess. I really want to try Is It Charm. I don't think that's the card for the deck, unfortunately. But I do want to try Is It Charm to give you a little bit of main board extra interaction, a little bit of counter spells for the removal. I don't know. I don't know if it's the best, but I think there's a world where it could be Is It Charm.
If you weren't playing Charter Course, or you were just playing two Charter Course, like, you can just up that, too.
Yeah.
People
are talking about, like, Reckless Impulse.
I don't know. Reckless Impulse is sort of interesting, right? Like, light up the stage, but you don't have to hit them. So.
Because the problem with light up the stage is, right, like, you're only going to usually run on, like, 3 to 4 mana max. So
you
don't want to have to worry about getting in for damage and then triggering all your prowess.
Can the
dudes?
Reckless Impulse cards wait till my next turn?
Let me double check.
Oh, pull it up, baby.
Let me check.
Pour me another round of the tequilas.
Doggos. Until your next turn, you may play those cards.
Until your next turn? Okay. So that's good.
So, but it's not the end of your next turn. It's until your next turn.
Oh, so it's not good.
Yeah.
So I don't even get to, like, upkeep. I have to cast it during my opponent's turn.
No, sorry. It is the end of your next turn. End of your next turn.
Okay.
So never mind. Take that back.
Yeah.
I've also been drinking.
Right. I'm drinking from a Bucky's cup.
Yeah, Boosie's.
Boosie's. I didn't go to a Bucky's on the way up here.
Oh, I stopped at multiple.
I'll stop at my own Bucky's in my own car tomorrow.
Yeah.
What are your daily practices?
So, okay, so those decks live, right?
Yeah.
What about the mid-range decks? Or do we just go back to, like, Ghoul Spellbreaker?
Like,
do we get to uncage Rhino? Is this the great Rhino unbanning?
So, like, I don't think this is the great, like, reject modernity, return to Rhino. This is not that. That's not what
like,
is happening.
Like, Chris, like, I think, you know, we're recording with Chris last night. He said that, like, oh, they found my list of 35 cards to ban until Rhino's good again.
Oh, my
God. Now we only need 33 more cards.
I mean, like, we gotta ban Grease Fang next.
What are the Grixis Piles gonna do?
What are the Grixis Piles gonna do? They're gonna continue to play
Nicol Bolas
until the wheels fall off. I don't think you understand. I mean, you know, they've been getting it too good for too long, right? They got Corpse Appraiser now, right?
Yeah.
They got their looks, right?
I want
their pretty face.
You know what I wanna play?
What do you wanna play?
I wanna play some Boomer Jund.
You wanna play some Boomer Jund?
Yeah, dog.
Can you play that? What do you
mean? I mean, look, we got like Sylvan Carrington. We can play Bone Crusher.
Mm-hmm.
We can play Ziatora's Envoy.
Well, that's an exciting card.
We can play some other just big stupid cards. We get to play Graveyard Trespasser. We can still play Chariot and Fable of the Mirror Breaker.
It sounds like you're just playing Rakdos midrange.
With good green cards?
With bad green cards. With clunky 4-mana green cards.
Shh, we have Sylvan Carrington though, Ricky.
Man,
if we had Carrington to the bank.
Real talk. If we had Raging Ravine, if we had that cycle of man lands, I think like we would play Jund over just red black.
Yeah.
Real talk. I really think Raging Ravine would make me play Jund.
We're not playing it for Lava Claw Reaches.
Right. No, not at all. And like what's the other one we could play? Hissing Quagmire?
Yeah.
That one's not that great.
No.
But like Raging Ravine, that's a card, you know?
That's a good one.
And I mean, I don't know. But also we gotta beat like out Den of the Bugbear and Hive of the Eye-Timer, which are just insane cards also. Yeah.
Man. So here's the question, though. Here's kind of where I want to end it.
Sure.
We think about, like, the last time we had a big banning in Pioneer, right?
We
lost all, like, I'm not talking, like, just when we just, like, just banned Uro, right? I mean, we banned, like, Uro, Teferi sort of at the same time, right? I think, like, the big combo banning. And we're just like, okay, if we take out Inverter, we're also going to take out Kethys into the Breach, Walking Ballista. We're just getting all of them, right?
Unban Kethys is what you're saying.
No.
You heard it here. What are you saying?
Do you think that just banning these two is enough? Like, if we're going to... Like, obviously, we are on the thought process of no bans, right? Maybe we can agree we're on the leave the format alone for now. By taking out Winota, by taking out EI,
mm-hmm.
are some of the cards that were left too good now?
I don't...
Like, is Nykthos a problem? People are going to obviously still complain about Thoughtseize. We're going to laugh at those people. But are there a few cards, again, like your Nykthoses and things like that, that are now in a position to become even more so dominant without the competition of, like, Winota helping keep them in check?
Man, I don't know why all these mono-green players out here on Twitter, acting like they tough, acting like they got no bad matchups anymore. I mean, like, some of y'all ain't out there facing Kazakhan every day, and it shows, you know?
But I appreciate all the mono green players who are telling me, like, they should ban Nykthos. This card is gross.
I mean, like, they don't have sideboard slots for things like Stetezan Petitioner and stuff like that, whatever that card's called, right?
Yeah, Stetezan Petitioners.
And, like, they're playing all these artifacts and Karn package cards and stuff. Like, you know.
Really, Storm the Festival is the problem.
You know, if all you know is tutoring for Persistent Cauldron, you haven't been to Cirque du Soleil, right?
That's that upper echelon.
So, like, I just don't think Mono Green is safe from Mono Red. Honestly, I'm the biggest believer in Mono Red. I fight for Mono Red S tier.
You and Sam are going to have to fight that out.
Me? I mean, what? He's in my corner, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, but
yeah.
You got to fight for who believes in Mono Red harder.
I believe in Mono Red.
I will say, he did, before the Express Federation banning, was writing his breakup letter to Mono Red as he was becoming a prowess player.
Right, see, and, you know, I didn't give up the dream, right? I was like, I think it's time to Mono Red. Like, it's time to face... Man.
Coxan?
Coxan? No. Kazakhan?
Kumano.
Kumano faces...
Faces... Coxan.
Coxan. Sure. I can't tell you what the red channel land is.
Sokenzon?
It's Sokenzon. That's right.
Yeah.
I'm just like, whenever I'm trying to like look for it, I'm just like, it's the Crucible of Defiance.
Sokka, Ahsoka,
Sokka,
Boomerang Guy.
I can always remember Takanuma, though. For some reason, yeah. Takanuma just goes like right here in my brain.
Iganjo, Boseiju, Otawara.
Otawara, they're all of them work, but then like, so Kenzin, Kazakan, they all mix together in my
Quetzalcoatl.
Yeah.
Chupa Thingy.
Yeah. So I personally think the format's going to be in a good place. I think that, mid-range is still going to be good. Rakdos mid-range is still going to be good. Mono Green's going to still be good. All the decks that are good are going to stay good. I don't think that Blue-Red Control is leaving. I think they're still going to stick around. Like, the Narset Control deck's going to stick around. I think that it's not going to be as good as Blue-White Control.
Yeah.
I think it's going to lose a lot of consistency, but it's still going to be around. Phoenix is going to lose a lot of consistency, but it's still going to have, like, really powerful plays and really powerful extra turns goes.
Shout out to everyone on Twitter trying to play all the Omnath Greed piles and be like, oh, the deck sucks still.
Yeah. It's not modern where you can just play money pile.
Yeah, where you can play free interaction.
But, you know, also, they didn't mention any of that in modern. If you look at any modern Twitter, everybody is either, like, literally the bourgeoisie modern player just spreading out their all-foil foreign 80-card money piles, yeah, right? Or complaining that they cannot afford the four-color money piles to compete anymore. It's a wild time. And they were just like, Murktide? That's what you guys think is the problem, right? Murktide? We think it's okay. Don't worry, guys. And it's like, everybody's just mad about literally just four-color stuff in a cube.
Yeah. Modern Horizons 2 Tribal plus Omnath.
Modern Horizons 2 plus Yorian Tribal.
Yeah.
Exactly. Fire Design Tribal. Jeez. Opaque Sleeve Tribal. Oh, man.
But I don't know. Like I said with Chris, like I said with you, I don't think these bans needed to happen. I think Winota is a knee-jerk reaction. Expressive Iteration probably should be gone.
I will say, though, the only thing I'm upset about is Wizards.
Let us know next time.
A warning. There's events happening this weekend. I had a free, no-stakes Pioneer event that night, and everybody was like, oh, can I play these? Also, apparently Arena is bugged, and you can continue to play EI anyways.
Until probably, like, tomorrow when the servers reset.
Yeah. So, you know, just give us a warning. Give us a little heads up. Be like, hey, guys, there are changes coming in the pipeline. So, you know, you can be ready for those events coming.
Again, just because I only paid $600 for my deck instead of, like, $2,000.
Right.
Why did Modern get the heads up?
Right. Let us know.
Yeah.
You know, let us know.
Well, that's it for me and Ricky. Let's kick it over to some interviews.
Woo.
All right, what is going on, everyone? Ruckman back with Crew 3 here with a awesome guest. Probably the most excited I've been for everyone we're going to get to talk to. I mean, how could you not? I mean, you're the man, the myth, the legend, Cedric Phillips. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Don't need to be excited. I'm just a Magic player. It's not a big deal, but I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you're just a Magic player, but I mean, when I think of competitive Magic, your name is someone who I just think of waking up for Saturday morning to watch, and I mean, keeps me involved in the game, right? So we're here to talk about Pioneer, Magic in general, and just sort of what's going on. So, I mean, obviously, big news, Pioneer is going to be the first format of the Pro Tour, things like that. Now, we swords aren't locked in like they were in the old system of having the PPTQs being Pioneer, but what do you think that means for the format that Wizards tapped it to be the first Pro Tour format?
Well, I know that I wrote something. Whenever they announced, like, what was that, like, that Pioneer product that they had?
The Challenger decks?
Yeah, the Challenger decks, right? And people were like, you know, why is this a thing? It doesn't really make a sense. And I guess it didn't really make a lot of sense at the time. Sure. Either it just kind of felt kind of random. And Pioneer as a format has kind of felt random for a little while now. But my stance on Pioneer has always been, and I feel this way about any format that Wizards has, is if they want to make one of their formats relevant, they can just do what they just done with Pioneer, which is like, okay, it's a Pro Tour format now, so you have to care. Basically, right? So I think that Pioneer is mostly a good format, but if they want to make it a relevant format that people care about, all they have to do is say it's a Pro Tour format, which is what they've done. So now everyone's strong, obviously, but people care about it way more than they did, what, 5-6 months ago?
Sure.
So
So now, of course, you know, you said it's, I'm sorry if I was an okay, it was good, it was an okay format.
Yeah.
What do you, where do you think the format is as a whole? Do you think there are changes you would make to the current sort of standing? Obviously, you know, people want to go online and talk about ban Winota, ban the Delspells, ban this, ban X. Do you think that's a lot of hyperbole versus like what people are seeing in the leagues? That doesn't really match up with events. Do you think paper events starting to happen is going to change perception of what is and what isn't an egregious sort of member of the format?
So I think that paper events are going to kind of give us a better idea of exactly where things are at. Not that the Magic Online metagame is irrelevant. I do think that people oftentimes, how do I want to put this in a nice way? Let's say that they're hyperbolic in their complaints about cards need to be banned.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because this isn't my podcast, so I'm not going to swear a bunch, but...
we can add dolphin sound effects later.
Okay, great, great, yeah. So, you know, like, Lotus Field is obviously powerful. I don't think it's unbeatable. It is hard to interact with, so it's arguable how problematic that card is. I don't really buy Winota as being bannable because you have to really build your deck a certain way, so that feels just a little strong to me, and it always kind of has. Dig Through Time and Treasure Cruise are the cards I would be the most concerned about. Even though fetch lands aren't in the format, I would still be concerned about both of them.
Sure.
So, to me, that's how I feel about the format. I think I generally feel that banning conversations are always overblown anyway. People just need something to complain about. You know, the third or fifth or tenth time you lose to Winota, it's like...
What is Magic without an argument over the weekend?
Yeah, pretty much. Or, you know, every moment of every day. So, yeah, I think that they could probably do a little bit of work in the format, but, like, this overarching, all these cards need to be banned, it feels, to me, like it's a little much.
So Pioneer versus Explorer, obviously that's a big conversation of it takes several years to get the card pool out there, right? Even though we're going to drop 40 card alchemy sets every set release, you know.
Sure.
Do you think that a delayed delayed full realization of Pioneer on Arena with the Explorer format could lead to issues like where we saw with Historic, where that was supposed to be the placeholder format, and then Historic kind of veered in its own direction? Do you think that could happen with Explorer this time around as well? Or,
well, in the same vein that if Wizards of the Coast wants to make Pioneer a relevant format, they can do the same thing with Explorer, right? It just depends on how many resources they want to put towards balancing the format and how much they care. You know, as an example, like right now, pretty sure Wizards of the Coast, obviously this is me speaking for myself, don't aggregate me. Pretty sure Wizards of the Coast just doesn't give a shit about Historic. So it's just there, and it's a thing that you can play, right? But like, just covered the streets of New Capenna Championship, and Historic was half of the format, and it's like, what's new in Historic? I don't know, Ledger Shredder's in the format now, but like, there's not really any cultivation of the format, right? So I feel similarly about Explore, which is like, they announced it, it's a thing that's going on, it's Pioneer adjacent. If they want it to be relevant and they want to like get their hands on it and balance it and everything, they will. And if they don't, then it's like, hey, here's a thing you can do, and if you don't want to do it, we don't care, and if it is a thing you want to do, we also don't care, right?
Sure.
That's how I feel very strongly about that with Historic. Like, it's just there right now, right? Like, I don't know, like, you can play it, you cannot play it, I don't think anybody cares, and then it's like, oh, this is randomly a part of a online pro tour, I guess we need to figure it out. Cool, nothing's changed, right? Explorer, I think over time, I mean, I guess the goal in theory is that they're trying to make it like Pioneer or Pioneer Lite. Maybe that happens, maybe it doesn't. Maybe they go like halfway through with that and they're just like, maybe we do something else,
sure.
Right? Like, you just don't know, and obviously things change. Like, maybe, you know, this is hearsay, like maybe Gavin thinks of a different format or someone internally thinks of another format. It's like, oh, this is a better idea and it works better for us internally to be able to matriculate this onto Magic Arena. So I don't really know what the future is of Explorer, especially in combination with Pioneer. It's just very hard to say.
Yeah, I think it's totally fair. Now, one of the things, though, that we do want to be talking about Paper Pro Tour coming back, obviously that's going to be a big deal for the game. It's really going to change things up. What do you think, how do you think their balancing act is going to play out between we still want to kind of have this digital brand, but also we realized digital Pro Tours kind of didn't go the best. Whether or not it's the pandemic, who's to say, right? But obviously paper coming back is going to be a big deal. How do you think that transition back to paper, or are they going to try to play a balancing act? What do you think there?
No, I think the paper is the main priority, and I think they know that. I think, you know, the online Pro Tours and our set championships that I covered and, you know, the rest of the team covered, and they did the best that they could, you know, from a cover standpoint, from a make this a good tournament experience for the players standpoint within the pandemic over the past 2.5, what are we, almost 3 years now? That's kind of wild. They just did the best they could. I mean, at the end of the day, I think the people that work in that building are smart enough to know that Magic is not an online game. Like, it's a game that you can play online. There's a big difference between an online game and a game you can play online, right? So I don't have a problem with them shooting their shot. And in the midst of the pandemic, there was no other shot to shoot. right? Or shoot, you know, yeah, shot to shoot.
Sure.
Like, I think I got that right. Yeah, so, you know, it's fine. And I think they are going to transition back in a very meaningful way to paper. They've already made their announcement with the Pro Tours and all that other stuff that everybody knows now. And I think that they just know that their game is a paper-based game, and I think their priorities will lie in making sure that the paper experience is the best one. The online experience is not a negative one, and you can only do so much with how many resources you have. And I don't think that means that they don't care about their online experience. It's that they have to care less about their online experience, and that's okay.
Sure. Now, really one kind of last question I have for you is, besides, again, the balancing act between digital and paper, we're really starting to see a tap into more of the casual market, with Commander being one of the big pushes that they've really started to tap into now. How do you think that's going to affect really competitive Magic going forward, now that they are not the air quotes darling child, now we are really focusing back in on Commander Fest and things like that, versus we're having places like DreamHack we're at now, who's been a wonderful host for us all, sort of giving out more third party for the bigger events, and we're kind of just pushing like Command Fest and things like that from the home store.
Well, I think that, you know, focusing on, I don't really like the term, and I don't think you use this term, but you know, that was like 30 seconds ago, and I don't have a great brain. So, like, I don't really like the idea of calling, like, a casual crowd, like the Commander crowd or anything.
Yeah, that's right. It's mostly, like, the the grinder crowd.
Yes, and so this is, like, a thing that just, like, Magic players do, so I'm not, like accusing anything. Because I'm actually trying to change my vernacular and not call the Commander audience the casual audience. They're just the non-competitive audience,
sure.
Right? That's what I think. Because casual in our game has, like, a negative connotation, and it's just true, even if you believe that to be stupid or dumb or whatever, which I kind of do, but it's just true, right? So for the non-competitive audience, I think that is where Wizards' focus is at, with, like, supplementary products and Command Fest, like the one that's going on in Richmond right now, even, like, this DreamHack event. Like, there's not, like, a lot of competitive events going on. This is the release weekend for the new Commander product, Baldur's Gate, which I know, like, there's going to be a lot of people who are interested in that because they played Baldur's Gate. There's people who are interested in that because of Commander, and that's like a set that is not focused towards some psychopath like myself who would be like, this set came out, I have not looked at a preview, I don't even care.
It was great to take spoiler season off of the set.
Yeah, like, and I'm sure, like, there are other people who are like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen in my entire life, and that's awesome. Different strokes for different folks. At the end of the day, I think they're going to focus more on their casual audience, which I think is just the better thing to be doing. The competitive audience is very vocal, but it's not as large as their, I said casual. Their non-competitive audience are going to focus on their non-competitive audience more than their competitive audience, and I think that's a smart thing to be doing from, like, a bottom-line perspective. Happiness levers and stuff like that, should you care more about what the competitive audience than the non-competitive audience thinks? That's a long argument. I don't really know how much time you have, right?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like, if I were in charge or something like that, no, I would focus on the people who are going to buy Secret Lairs and these Commander products and go to the Command Fest and stuff like that, and then find some space for the competitive audience as well, because obviously it exists. You know, there's the DreamHack that's going to be taking place in Atlanta for the Pro Tour, and I hope that show's awesome as well for everybody who goes there for whatever reason they want to play Magic.
Yep. Now, real quick, one last thing. I said this last thing, but I want to talk real quick about Coalesce here, because you have taken the sort of the Magic apparel from back when we were just wearing SCG and Channel Fireball shirts with their flag on it, and
yeah,
really brought it out and just sort of really just changed the game, I feel like, with Magic apparel. And sort of, again, you're not just wearing a website's logo on your shirt.
True. It's true. So the interesting thing about apparel is that Magic doesn't really have great apparel, and this is going to be like me throwing shade or whatever, but I'm an honest human being. Look, in my market research, which is talking to a lot of people for the past 20 years, I don't really think people really, it's not that people don't like Teferi, it's just that I don't think anyone wants to wear a shirt with Teferi on it, right? So, like, I think that Magic has a diverse enough audience who, yes, the commonality is that we all like to play Magic, but we all have other interests as well, and so that's kind of what my brand does, is we cross over, you know, Magic interests with things that are outside of Magic, like Soda, like Scott Pilgrim, like the Black Panther, like the Anti-Social Social Club. Our play on that is the Anti-Mulligan Club. And you know, we do music-related crossovers with Magic and all this other stuff that, you know, in the same way you're seeing crossovers between Street Fighter and Magic, we're kind of doing the same thing in the apparel space. And at the end of the day, I have found, in my market research, quote-unquote, that people really don't mind wearing Magic-related things, but they just want them to be cool,
yeah,
and interesting and fun. And, you know, like, I'm not making shirts that have, like, the sarcastic text, which is just, like, don't talk to me until I had my coffee or something like that. Like, I want to make something a little bit more fun and creative. But, yeah, I don't know. We're just kind of making cool shit.
You have a reference to the thing, and I love that.
Yeah, and like, so for the people who get that, they're like, that's awesome,
yeah,
right? And for the people who don't know what that is, and they ask me, and they're just like, what is that shirt? And I'm like, you know, it's Takashima, and it's also the movie The Thing. And they're like, oh, that's rad. And I'm like, cool. You know, you can buy it or not buy it. I don't care. But, like, that's what we're doing. And so we just make cool stuff.
All right. Well, Cedric, anything else you want to plug here before we just sign off and say thank you once again for joining us?
No. No, not really.
All right. Well, be sure to find Cedric. I'm sure you already know where to find Cedric. Well, thank you again, Cedric. Have you enjoy the rest of DreamHack. It's your CGB, the one and best in one. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, man. This is great.
Yeah, awesome. All right. So we, we're going to become a pioneer, but hey, now we have to explore a crossover in general. But I do want to take most of this opportunity to talk about the real differences between online, not really online, but really arena magic and paper magic, which is, of course, where you find yourself more in the arena space and things like that. Do you think there is a big enough noticeable difference in sort of how paper and arena really represent in the magic space?
Yeah, there's a pretty big difference. Just to let you know, I've played paper a lot longer than I played arena. I've been playing Magic since Revised, so I've got 20-some years of paper under my belt. I actually played the beta of MTGO, so I was there when they first tried their first digital offering. It was free back then. It was kind of incredible. To try to, like, answer the question of, like, the differences between the player bases or things like that, or the interactions, I think that Arena, it appeals to a weird hybrid of a casual, spiky nature. And that's honestly why I try to be the one and best of one. I'm trying to give people who enjoy and engage with the game in a very best of one way. Because anybody who's, like, listened has heard, like, the stats. Best of one is, like, 90-some percent of the games that are played on Arena compared to best of three. I definitely grew up with best of three and tournament magic as my thing. But best of one is how a lot of this new player base engages, player base who got into Hearthstone and possibly grew up with it, things of that nature. And there, when I say it's casually spiky, they want the competitive release of playing a game and, like, being able to feel good about the victory, maybe feel the defeat a little bit, salty about the defeat. They engage with it in a way that winning matters, but it's purely from, like, this little psychological reward level. And they also want to do it fast. They don't want to sit down and grind out, like, a 2 out of 3 match to best their opponent. They want to smash the ladder, you know, things like that. So the one in best of one is a character who leans into that and tries to, we take best of one ladder more seriously than it has any right to be taken. Yeah. Because that makes it more fun for the people who are trying to get that competitive release out of it in a very efficient way.
So you mentioned the players transitioning from Hearthstone to Magic, right, as a thing, or people trying to get that sort of, and we're really seeing now with the advent of alchemy and things like that, it feels like a lot of, you know, the online card games sort of copying the big original creators like Magic when Hearthstone was created, right? And sort of trying to delve into what can a card game be in a digital space. Do you think the identity of Magic comes into conflict in that when now we have Magic trying to move into a more digital space with alchemy and things like that? Obviously, it's still Magic, but what do you think is, like, the cutoff point in a lot of players, a long time players really see with now we're having the more Hearthstone-y kind of cards moving into the game we're all long term players used to playing in that sense?
Well, the established player base, the cutoff point is the second that you so much as move where the art or the artist name are located on a card. You could literally change anything and find an audience that just thinks that's terrible and it's the last straw and now they're going to quit, right? I think that the digital-only mechanics making people upset and moving in that Hearthstone direction for the established player base makes sense, because when you love something and you understand it, especially something as specific and narrow as Magic, like, we speak Magic language. And when you come to DreamHack, everybody around us speaks Magic language. So if you sit down and you say, oh, are you going to seek a card from your library? We're like, well, what the hell are you talking about? What game do you play? I play Magic the Gathering. I played it for 20 years. We played it long enough to be snobby and old about it, okay? So, yeah, they're like that. And it's that brutal buzzword of, well, it's definitely not designed with their with them in mind, because there's nothing changing in that vein about Magic. They've definitely hit their stride. If you play paper Magic, like, it's been a while. When was the last major rules overhaul? You could say, like, they changed, like, competitive rules so that who was responsible for missed triggers. That, those are, like, the biggest changes to the engine for the most part. Maybe Planeswalker redirect damage is the biggest change in a long
time. I mean, I know for me is that I can't be bribed as a judge anymore. That was a real bummer for my week.
Yeah, but, like, if we're saying those are the last time we seriously changed the engine, think about how long that's been. Think about how entrenched just playing a game of Magic is and what a universal language it is to paper players. A Commander player, for the most part, can play a game of Standard, and the language is so similar, even though there's such different types of things. So the fact that you go into Arena now and they're making these digital-only products, which do seem inspired, very strongly inspired by other games, and it's a different language, is alienating and it's frustrating. But then you remember, oh wait, a player who grew up playing Hearthstone, this isn't that weird of a language. This is kind of exactly what they're in for. I remember I started playing Hearthstone specifically after Arena came out because I had so many Hearthstone players asking me questions about, and they would say things like, oh, is that Death Rattle? Or, oh, is that Battle Cry? And I'm like, I don't know. Let me go find out. So I, like, learned the vocabulary just to speak to them. Alchemy has its own vocabulary, and that's going to be alienating to anybody who doesn't play Alchemy, and it's going to trigger people for a while. I think it remains to be seen if it'll be long-term successful. Does that kind of appeal actually bring in new players? It's not going to be, like, the people who love Alchemy aren't going to be the established player base. So the established player base is going to continue hating Alchemy for 10 to 20 years. If Alchemy grows successful in spite of that, people will have to adapt and deal with it. If it doesn't, it'll just always be appealing to a group that we weren't talking to about our old hattie ways anyway. So it'll be in its own bubble.
Well, do you think the one of the issues we're really seeing in a lot of this uproar, this transitionary period into Wizards changing their sort of focused player base, that a lot of more so the grinder groups of players, the players that are going and playing in the GPs like that every weekend, are kind of starting to realize that they are and have been a long-term minority in the player base, and that's sort of where a lot of the conflict we're seeing come from, is that Wizards is starting to pay more attention to the, not really casual, like the non-grinder crowd, right? And that is sort of where we are seeing, you know, we're bringing Commander Fest back instead of Grand Prix right now, right? And things like that. So do you think that's part of the conflict, is that now the grinder class is having to realize that they are more the minority than they thought they've been in the long term?
Yeah. By definition, the grinders are the most entrenched, deepest fans. They also are in many ways the most aspirational because people see them out there traveling, competing, and want to be a part of that. And because of that, they have, you know, they're kind of spotlighted a good amount. Like, you know, if you go on Twitter, like, you know exactly who to follow if you want to follow Magic Pros and things like that. And it never felt like the minority, you know, it never did, because these were basically the parts of the game that were most visible to those looking for the information. And if you're going to grind, what do you need? You need information. I remember, like, when the Dojo was a new website. I've been playing this for a long time. When I found out you could look up tournament reports online and get deck lists, the information was important. So the grinders have been providing information for a long time, and that because of that, people seeking that information, they got built up. And now they've become like these pedestals of the game, like these pillars of the game. And in the background has been the casual scene this whole time, which we could all, you know, kind of safely ignore. It was kitchen table. But Wizards has definitely, the genie's out of the bottle. They buy more cards. They spend more money. And it is a brutal reality when you start seeing products that are so clearly not for you that you start wondering, well, wait, how come these resources weren't spent on making that thing I really like and love, and now I'm told I can't have things like GPs and coverage? It doesn't sound like it makes sense. Business sense doesn't play by the rules of, I guess, the same fundamental feelings of, like, loss that we get when something's taken away from us. We miss it so much more than if we never had it in the first place. It's pretty brutal. So that's tough. I, as a content creator and as a person who came from the competitive scene, I just keep trying to understand and get to know, like, what the casual crowd wants. And the first thing I found out was a complete misconception. Casuals They like to win. They really do. They actually do. So if you can try to provide them kind of the same thing I was looking for when I was a grinder and trying to play tournaments, if you can provide them tips and ways to win, even in their casual games, they actually like it. They actually like it quite a bit most of the time. And they also like to rage about the decks they don't like. And they also like to complain when their meta is stale. Like, we have a lot more in common than it appears. So, like, you can go to Command Fest and get that competitive outlet. It feels very different, but you can. I've been turn 3 killed at a lot of Command Fest lately.
That's the big thing, right? It's like, you know, when you think of casual, you think of non-competitive. It's like, I don't know, man. I've seen some real, like... The casual is definitely not non-competitive in a lot of ways. That's why you have the Commander deck tier list, right? Like, yeah. A 10 is going to crush a 2 type of deal.
A huge majority of people, there is a minority who are very, very invested in social experience. And, you know, they care about how everybody feels. But a majority of people, like, deep down, yeah, they remember if they won. They try to forget if they lost. Yeah. And that's the way it goes.
And I think the big thing, like you're talking about as well, is the perspective gating thing. You know, I started a new job recently about a year ago, and they have sealed leagues for Magic. And, you know, I would say I'm one of 3 people out of this group of 30 that play these at my job that actively keep up with tournament reports, things like that. You know, I'm one of 3 people that look at spoiler season, right? Like, there are plenty of players out there who are just... I'm just going to go play, like, one event, like, a year type of thing. I'm just going to go show up to pre-release, have my fun, go home. And I feel like a lot of the more grindy crowd sort of forget that is a lot of Magic players. Like, it's really interesting. I think that really opened my eyes to a lot of Magic experience that more players than what I normally associate with experience.
Yeah, that's 100% true. The Magic has almost like a pyramid structure where the base is, it's huge, but you don't see it. It's like the iceberg, right? It's all underwater. Like, we don't know about these folks until, you know, like, it used to be that you'd go to Command Fest or GPs near the end of their run, that the commander areas just started, like, taking over and getting bigger and getting bigger. And it's like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know.
GP Vegas, who had like half of the hall space, was all commander pods, right?
Right. Yeah, it's kind of amazing. But, well, I mean, we all like the same game. We can speak that language, trying to kind of find some common ground and some fun ways to make content that can cross and appeal different types is a challenge, but we work at it.
So, real last question here to wrap things up. Sort of, what are your just general thoughts on just the state of just kind of just nebulous Magic right now? Are there directions you'd like to see the game go, either in Arena, in paper, just in general?
Yeah, the part of this that I've thought the most about is Arena. It's where I make daily content for. And I've watched a kind of a pretty sad product cycle with Arena. It's definitely hit a point where with Magic players where it's way cooler to complain about Arena than get excited about Arena.
Magic players are nothing if they can't complain.
That is true, but in this case, it's Wizards isn't helping. What did we get from the new update where they promised, you know, quality of life improvements? Now we have a starter decks folder we can't delete. I can't wait to go try out those starter decks. Good thing I didn't delete that. I wanted to play that last week and couldn't. You know what I mean? It's like, oh my God. It feels like around every corner, there's more problems. The recent online tournament and all of the issues that it had.
All of France getting dropped.
That's laughable. There's getting the draw, like 2 players got a win in the World's Race situation that happened. In the top 8, there was like a disconnect into a timeout that cost a match. Like, it's relentless. The issues are relentless. And as a content creator, I'm challenged every day because if I complain about Arena, I will get more views, likes, upvotes. But I've also studied the actual trend, and even for a place like YouTube, where some people will tell you that you need to lean negative with a certain amount of your content to be successful, that is true to an extent, but it's not a long-term strategy. Like, if you honestly complain about stuff every day, the trend will plateau and then it will fall, and you will be that guy, the long-term yell at clouds boomer, who, because you can't pick up new audience this way. New audience still wants to know what to love and be enthusiastic about the game. So I'm in a tough spot right now where Arena is consistently, and not just me, like any content creators, Twitch streamers on Arena are in this spot. The Arena is consistently finding ways to be the thing that you want to complain about and not this amazing product. So I try to always keep in the back of my head how hard it was to find a game of Magic and play a game of Magic online, you know, like before Arena. And it's legitimately amazing. What people forget is before Arena was released, a lot of folks said it couldn't be done. Magic on your phone, like close to real Magic on your phone, on your iPad, even on your PC, like there were people who thought it couldn't actually be done in a fun way. And Arena did it. They delivered, and it is fun. But my God, did they need to just take some of the narrative over there at Wizards, put in some real improvements, get Pioneer on it, like get like the formats people want to play on it. They need to give people some wins, because we want to, I think more people than they know want to love this product again. And the economy is another, just like, why do they do the things the way that they do? Are they trying to make this miserable?
Well, I just found it really funny where, you know, hey, we finally could buy wild cards. $50 is a lot. And then it's, I have people in our Discord being like, did they take the bundle out? Yeah, they did. Why?
They did?
The bundle was limited.
I missed it. I didn't buy it. What will I do? I'll have to open 50 packs now or whatever it is. Oh my God.
Hey, don't forget to get your alchemy boosters, because you might just get regular wild cards in them too. They've also apparently added the alchemy cards, I believe, to the premier SNC drafts. Like...
Okay. I mean, nothing you can say right now about what happened to Arena in the latest update could shock me. Unless it was good.
Yeah. Remember the patch where just all the black cards got removed?
What?
Yeah, there was a patch within a year. They're like, yeah, okay, so when you relaunch, you're going to notice another 2 gig download. We forgot the black cards.
Oh. Yeah, that one. Okay, I think I slept through that. That was back when they did the streamer early access event, so I would do like 24 hours a day before and then sleep during actual release day, which is a good strategy to just never try to play their freaking product on release day. Is a very good strategy that shouldn't be a good strategy.
We got to do one of the ones we got to do for that. We broke, I don't know what we did, but we got to the dev console.
We made it to the dev console.
And so it was like, yeah, we were like, okay, tutor card draw, like we had like the test back engine like pop up in this. That was the best break we've ever done in anything. We could have picked our own matches. It was hilarious.
Nice.
I don't know what to say about it.
No spectator mode, but you can hack the dev console, is what you're telling me?
Yeah, apparently. I don't think so now. They were really interested in our log files when that happened.
I bet they were. So,
I mean, unless there's anything else you really want to briefly mention?
You know, just that Magic's really cool, and it's nice to be out here, and thanks for the interview. And I am Covert Go Blue. You can find me, the one and best of one, daily YouTube videos. Search for Covert Go Blue on YouTube. I'm probably, just going to say it, the most watched MTG Arena player in the world by watch time. So come join the Cool Kids Club. It's fun.
All right, for sure. Thank you so much again for talking to us. Hope you have a great rest of the weekend. Talk to you all later.
I want to once again say thank you to our wonderful guests, Cedric Phillips, CGB, DeKrabs, MTG, Casual Jake. It was great talking again with Amanda from Trans Lifeline. Make sure you go donate to that wonderful organization, translifeline.org. I also want to say thank you to our wonderful Patreon, patreon.com/crew3mtg. That support of listeners like you, we wouldn't have gotten to be able to do DreamHack this weekend, which was a great deal for us. So awesome to do. Got to meet a lot of great people. And besides the ones you got to hear from today's episode or on those Twitch VODs, we got to talk with a lot of the people who we'll hopefully be able to collab with in the future. And of course, you can find us at Crew3 Podcast on Twitter. It's where I run our Twitter account, Crew3MTG, on Twitch and YouTube. You can find Ricky at also Steve on Twitter, and you can find Chris at it's_Christmas, and Christmas has no T. We'll talk to y'all next week. Bye.